Hello, welcome to the big show. Yeah, your eyes don't deceive. There's only three of us. Yeah, we're actually supposed to be here, but Muller dug out a tweet this year this week that was actually going, "I'm going to be doing the Microsoft show on the British Tech Network. Let me know if you're interested." And that was 736 days ago. So no one should be surprised he's not here. Atley, you lightweight, mate. You said you were coming tonight. But joining me, however, good team nonetheless. Patrice, how you doing, mate?
I'm happy the week is over almost.
Well, I was going to say, have you got a bridging day tomorrow or something then?
No. But Fridays are like usually a little bit less work and less stress and everything. So, and yeah.
Weekend starts.
Fridays are podcasting days, right?
Weekend starts at the Mac Show, dead right.
Yeah, exactly.
And which is an hour late for you as well, so it's 4 o'clock for us. Next to him, I'd say next to him, you got no choice because there's no other spaces. Jeffrey, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well, and it's great to be hanging out with the two of you.
Now, I always reckon, right, that I sit down to do a big show, and it's like, oh, there's only three of us. It'll be fairly swift, get it over and done with. And we end up having the longest shows we ever do because the three of us talking. So it's he's hoping it'll be a normal length show, but I'm braced for the fact that it may not.
Well, and we've also had a really good show where it was just the two of us.
Yeah, we have. That's right. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, good point. Admittedly,
so
there was alcohol.
I guess what we're saying is the three of us, we're the core, we're the good people, and everyone else is just kind of crap that we let tag along.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. Fair comment. They're saying there's echoing, and I know why, because I'm an idiot. Because I didn't... I need Doc to do a consult. I need to fly Doc over to do consultancy on this.
Doesn't he have a friend that works for an airline? He actually has two friends that work for an airline, so...
Yeah, they actually, Mo...
Shouldn't be a problem, right?
Mo from IMN Max mentioned the fact that he was... echoing should be gone now. But Mo from IMN Max mentioned the story of the Hawaiian phone getting its data recovered from it and stuff. Cool. So excellent. The week in tech, let's not fight over who's going first. Ladies first. Off you go, Patrice. You can have the first one.
Okay. I don't even have the chat open, so...
That's all right.
Yeah, I'm well prepared. And Mike,
we've got time.
Larry?
Yeah, you blurred.
I don't even have the chat installed on this machine.
It's
okay,
not even soft focus.
It's okay, right? There we go. I don't know what happened. Story. I'm just going to text it to you and then...
Do you want to... No, I can't put it on from text. Let Jeff go first.
Hello. Okay, let's go.
Right, Jeff, yes. Stuff the girls. Off you go, Jeff. Your story, mate.
All right. And if we need more stories, I have more stories, too, just in case. You know, Patrice, if we need to stall for you. So here we go. Big question of the day. How many of us have used Quibi or even heard of Quibi?
No.
Until no idea. Today, I am.
Exactly.
Is this like a TikTok-y type? Thing or what
sort
was
the one
that went bust.
And it's a short form streaming video platform, but instead of being user created content, the idea is it's original content created just like if Netflix or Amazon Prime or Apple TV were making shows. That's what Quibi was. And it had several shows that apparently no one watched. And this was started by Jeffrey Katzenberg. And he recently started – oh, God, recently is a hard term to use with this one because it recently launched. And then recently after that, Jeffrey Katzenberg started shopping around trying to find a buyer because they were just bleeding money because no one was – watching the streaming service. And then I think it was yesterday. So for those of you that aren't watching in real time, on Wednesday, articles started popping up in the morning saying, hey, is Quibi going to go under? And a few hours later, it was new articles. Quibi is shutting down. So Jeffrey Katzenberg decided, yep, screw it, throwing in the towel, can't find a buyer.
Make Whitman's ex-HP, isn't she? Wouldn't she see of HP after Apothecary?
Something like that.
Whitman? Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's her. She's an older, and she's a savvy businesswoman as well. She's no stooge.
Yeah, and well,
she did well because she moved.
I mean, he knows his stuff for content creation because he's had a long run. I mean, he was running DreamWorks Animation.
Right.
He worked for Disney. So it's not like he was jumping into this without any idea of how this would work. And yet Quibi has come and gone, and it's, as of now, holding the dubious title of the shortest-lived streaming content service.
Yeah, I'm just doing a bit of Googling around here. Meg Whitman is the woman who took she's got a net worth of $5.3 billion, so losing $2 billion on a streaming service is probably still going to hit a fair old chunk. She's known for taking eBay from 5.7, and as I said, she was CEO of Hewlett-Packard from 2011 to 2015, where she saw the split, because she split off the printers, didn't she? Separation of them after Apothecary went. And she sold off what was left of the Palmer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep, I remember that.
Yeah. But she, like I said, she's no dumb blonde. She's a savvy woman. I'm gobsmacked that she's gone this far down this road. They're talking about that there's losses of $2 billion as an experiment.
Yeah, they did like one. They like collected about $1.8 billion in investments and then just lost it.
That doesn't sound.
Yeah,
like
they just couldn't get anyone to sign up for the service, really. Mm. And I on paper. At least over drinks, Quibi could sound like a good idea because everyone.
A $2 billion buys a lot of drinks.
I had to stretch with that.
Yeah, and $2 billion buys a lot of drinks.
They'd be nice drinks too. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, everyone has mobile devices. You're watching video content on your mobile device anyhow. So taking original professional produced shows and putting them into a short format and designing them specifically for a mobile device, I mean, that sounds like a good idea, but apparently not, because no one was buying into this.
They spent $63 million on ads in 6 months.
Most people still had never heard of them.
No, and it's interesting because we've actually got the two wrongest people, well, three wrongest people on this podcast to discuss this story, because Tom in the chat room, his wife was Meg Whitman's nanny for her kids.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, so Tom, feel free to dial in, mate. He said it was a very stupid idea in his humble opinion, and the both of them were at Disney, and Jeff K. met Megan in Disney. When Jeff met Megan... There you go, at Disney.
Mm.
But the founders won't lose anywhere near as much as the Quibi investors, says Tom. No, I think you're right, mate.
Yeah, that's pretty.
The venture capital's always what's pissed up the wall, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah, that's pretty common. Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure this was a good idea, to be honest. There is competition in this space, a lot of competition. So
yeah,
I'm not sure.
I agree. This was a horrible idea. But me saying on paper over a couple of drinks, it could sound like a good idea. I'm being very gracious right there, I think, because as soon as Quibi was announced, my knee-jerk reaction was, well, this is a service that's dead before it launches.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that as you said, they spent $65 million. Which is not that much for, like, well, it is a lot for a startup, but it's like, for if you want to be like a big player in the social media space, it's not that much. I mean, especially over time, like Facebook ads and whatever, that's, you can spend that. But the fact that we've not heard about it can have been one of two things.
You look at the list. Suck. I'm looking at another article here on Forbes, and the list is, they got they signed names such as Kevin Hart, Liam Hemsworth, Drake, Anna Kendrick, Lawrence Fishburne, Kiefer Sutherland. And it was just like, you couldn't make that work.
And nobody heard about it. So I would say whoever was in charge of marketing didn't do a good job.
They'll be selling off their assets. This is Jeffrey's desk. This is Megan's desk. Help yourself.
There you go. know, I'm wondering if any amount of advertising could have saved Quibi. Because and maybe I'm just the wrong market for this, but the idea of watching this content in this format is not appealing to me. When I watch a TV show, even if it's a short TV show, I want to sit on the couch in front of the television where I have my nice speakers and my nice screen. It's not something I'm interested in hunching over, you know, hunching my head down and looking at my phone screen, getting interrupted by phone calls or text messages or whatever. I mean,
the service spent $1.1 billion on content in its first few months. That's $100,000 per minute.
Yeah.
That's expensive, TV.
Yeah, I mean, content is expensive. I mean, just look at what Netflix and Amazon and whatever are spending. But they're spending it on, like, quality original content, usually.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't agree with you, Jeff. I agree with you in that you're probably not the target audience. I know plenty of people, I mean, my children included, that totally watch their stuff on phones.
Sure.
To be fair to them, they've put in the open letter that for two reasons it's failed. Either it was the model itself wasn't strong enough to justify a standalone streaming service, and they've also said that they think that there's an element of it that is timing and the current COVID crisis. I suppose that's a fair shout. It is a little.
I don't know. I would have said that in the current COVID crisis, there would be even more of a interest in a streaming platform.
Yeah.
If it was interesting, people have time.
Yeah, I think it's mostly one and a little bit of two. Thomas puts success, 100% inspiration, 99% perspiration from Edison. And there is a bit of that with this. That's the tech bubble, isn't it, a little bit, with a lot of the stuff that goes on in Silicon Valley. It's like, well, if we get enough backing, it'll just be a success, and then we'll sell it to Facebook for $16 billion or something like that. And life will be good, and we won't actually have to make anything. It'll just be the value will be in the asset.
I mean, there is a chance that that you're the next TikTok or the next whatever. Like, I mean, we know something else will pop up, and it's just a matter of what, not when. So I said, the money they spent, it is crazy in one sense, and it's not crazy in another. For a startup, it's definitely a lot of money. Like, they probably grew too fast for what they were trying to do and hadn't figured out the business model really.
Yeah, I guarantee that Hart Hemsworth.
Yeah, I'm
all
thinking
that
they were trying to create too much content.
Mm.
I mean, there are a lot of problems here, but for as much money as they spent, they could have taken the approach that Apple took, which a lot of people criticized in the beginning, but it seems to be working for Apple, which is get just a handful of shows and get those up and running, and then start adding in more content. And and Quibi tried to jump in with a lot of content right away.
Apple has the advantage of having, was it 200 something billion in the bank? So
Apple could afford to
if the 1 billion for the show doesn't work out, they could just throw another couple in. So
there's an interesting thing here from one of the Hollywood Insider reports. He said, if I'm going to watch Game of Thrones in 8-minute chunks, why wouldn't I just put it on the TV and keep pressing the pause button? And the answer to that is, because you wouldn't.
Yeah, that's exactly. True.
Why would you? Because you wouldn't.
Yeah. Why would you now, do that?
One place
sit
where
down
I
with a bottle
this...
of wine, get the missus there and go, right, 8 minutes, that's a lot, stop. Can't yeah. go to the toilet. Mind you, actually, with my bladder, that's probably about right.
So maybe you were the target
audience. Maybe I was the target audience. You should have come to England, mate. I never even heard of you till tonight.
Now, just aside it from, to the wrong from people. Ewan's use case, one place where I see where Quibi could have been a successful product.
Toilet stalls.
Would have been. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Uh-huh.
Interactive back door on a toilet stall. You watch 8 minutes of Game of Thrones. You get up, you wipe, you go.
That's brilliant. And I was thinking something like what CBS has done with short treks, where they make these little vignette episodes that fit into the whole Star Trek universe. And they're just these standalone little things. And they promote the other Star Trek products, and in many cases will include some little nugget that that plays into a full episode later on. So the people that saw these little shorts, they're like, oh, hey, I know that thing. And it's like a special Easter egg for them.
Yeah,
so
the
it's
geeks
a great
would
promotional
love,
thing.
The geeks would love some a little episode that gave them a chink of information that was between two episodes that had run back to back. Like that.
Yeah, so Quibi could have been set up as the promotion platform for all of these other shows that people are watching, where you get to see all these little Easter egg short episodes.
Star Wars Clone Wars was highly successful as a cartoon because of the fact A, it was aimed at kids, B, it was a manageable chunk, it was 30 minutes, you'd sit down mm-hmm. and you had this little bit of backstory that wasn't the political intrigue of the Phantom Menace series, but it was between two and three, and it filled you in the gaps of where Anakin grew up, because it kind of jumped, didn't it, after one. It was like, Anakin, mm-hmm. off you go with Obi, and then, holy shit, you're a man. And it's just like, yeah. what, in two? And you're just like, well, how did that happen? And then, you know, so Clone Wars kind of filled in that little bit of transition of where they were buddying up in two before they fell apart in three, and it was really good because of that. So I think that's a really good idea, mate. Stick a little micro episode on something in between at that kind of distance. Mm. Stick it on toilet door. Well, actually, thinking about toilet doors with porn, there we go. No, okay, maybe not.
yeah,
I think that service already exists.
Yes, it does. Yeah, and I mean, I think that the problem is, as I said, to an extent, this already exists. I mean, there's YouTube, there's Snapchat, there's TikTok, there is, well, Instagram, like stories and Instagram Live, there's Facebook Live. There's so many other options already that I don't know whether the market needed another solution here.
So. It was innovative. But it was just not well thought out about how it was, you know, the implementation was wrong. Definitely. Mm-hmm. I mean, I agree with Jeff there. I think there's nothing majorly, there's a nugget in that, and someone else might pick it up and run with it and actually make more of it than that, because they'll think about it and they'll see the failures. But, I mean, I think you always learn more from your failures than you do from success.
Yeah, that's true.
We're out with HS2 next week again with the camera system, and we're going to throw up a device that we know is not ready. But I said, just throw it up, let it glitch and click on and click off the servers, and we'll learn something by that. Might not,
exactly. That's how you're supposed to approach it. Like, do small scale testing, learn from it, and then adapt it. Not throw massive amounts of money on it and then hope it works.
The old, going back to Edison again, you know, what did you learn from all these, what did you get from all the failures? Well, I learned 2,000 ways not to make a light bulb.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's perfectly true.
And all he really needed to do was call Tesla.
Have you watched the new film with Benedict Cumberbatch?
No.
It's got Bandersnatch in it, and it's he plays Edison, and the guy that was Superman's adversary in the new first Superman. He was in Boardwalk Empire as well. He plays the guy that did the alternating current system and cleaned up. And he's it's a really good film, and it's interesting about the kind of bullshit that flows between them, and how Edison tried to prove that that the other system, the AC system, was more dangerous than the DC system. So he killed a horse with an electric shock through AC, and that led to the invention of the electric chair, which you know, he
wow.
they came to him and said, will you help us? And he went, no, electricity's got to be used for good. I won't use it for death. So then they said, well, you've got to help us, because you know, we need to make this. You know, would you rather see someone painfully die from us not knowing how to do it, or would you prove how it works properly?
Or just painfully die by you setting it up right?
Well, he wrote letters, and they were signed, you know, not T-E. And it just like, and the thing was, he said, like, you know, burn T-E. That was it, burn T-E at the bottom of every single letter. And the dickhead at the correctional facility kept all the letters. And he said, why did you keep the letters? He said, well, getting letters from Thomas Edison. It's like celebrity kills. It's a really good story. It's on, I think it's on Netflix. I can't remember what it's called, though. But it's got a Bandersnatch in it. So he's very good.
Did you say Cumberbund was playing Edison?
He's playing Edison. Yeah,
that just seems weird because
he's very good at him as well.
It's yeah, I'm just trying to visualize him as yeah. Edison.
And the movie is actually like called
completely
Edison.
Completely physically wrong.
Yeah. Well, Edison, a lot of the Edison pictures are actually him a lot older, and this picks up when he lost his first wife.
Oh, okay.
So it kind of, he does progress in age, but he doesn't, he's not, if you look at the picture of Edison when he's you know, in his latter years, it's like Einstein, isn't it? Everyone shows pictures of Einstein with his hair all over the place. And you're like, well, yeah, actually, but he hasn't thought of anything decent for 50 years at that point. And that was kind of Edison, I guess, as well. You know, in his moonlight years, photography had evolved, so there was more pictures of him in that state than there was when he was first.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Because, like I say, you know, if you type in, it's only just recently you've started getting pictures of Einstein in his heyday of theory. It's always been the stuff when he was at Princeton, and he probably took the debenture and never did a great deal. Just turned down offers of Israeli prime ministership.
The current war. Thanks for the link.
The current war.
That's it. Yeah.
It's called Edison in Germany. That's really funny.
Yeah, no, the current wars, and it's about AC versus DC. And I can't remember, it begins with a W, but he snubbed this guy. This guy wanted to have a lunch with him, and he wanted to create a partnership with him, and he got millions from something else. I can't remember what it was. And Edison snubbed him and just drove through on his train, didn't stop. And it then turned into a war between them. The other guy never, ever wanted. It was just Edison.
George Westinghouse?
Westinghouse, that was it. Yeah.
Michael Shannon plays him.
That's it. Mm-hmm. And he created General Electric again then, and he took on Tesla. But there was always a thing about Tesla had invented stuff, and they hadn't. And Edison made a joke about, well, if you do that, I'll give you $50,000. So he went away and he did it and came back and said, where's my 50 grand? And like, no, I didn't mean that. It's just a throwaway remark. I wasn't going to give you $1,000 for it. And a lot of the patents then were, that's why Tesla fell out with Edison. It's brilliant. It's really good. And now you don't need to go and see the film. No, it's not, you do, because there's a lot more twists than that. But,
yeah.
Well, I saw the Doctor Who episode where they meet Edison and Tesla. So that's basically like watching this, correct?
I don't know, because I didn't watch that.
Yeah. Well, Edison and Tesla end up having to deal with alien space monsters.
Oh yeah, that was covered. Actually, that was covered in Current Wars. You're dead right. Yeah, we met the Doctor. There was an alien space monster thing. Yeah, that's definitely in there. I'd forgotten that bit.
Cool.
Trace, your story.
Yeah, Facebook has an oversight board now. If you haven't heard,
headed Facebook by the same people that head the company. No.
So Facebook did this on their own. Nobody, at least openly, forced them to. But given that, Facebook has been in the bad side of the press for the last, I don't know how long, 5 years at least. This is a pretty clear PR thing. It looks like they're serious about it. They created a 20-member board for review. It contains former judges and lawyers and other people. And it's basically where you can submit an appeal to being removed or a post being removed from the platform, and they review it. And Facebook says they're independent, even though Facebook is paying for that. I think they set up a trust with 130 billion or something. Was it million or billion? I don't even remember. Million. Okay, not billion. 130 million trust that they say will cover the next couple of years of expenses. And they say they will abide by the board's decisions, even if it disagrees. But I think time will have to tell whether that's true. As I said, it's nobody forced them to. They're not an oversight board that was set up by the government or anything, forcing them to do it. No. This is Facebook kind of being proactive and
that's a good thing. That's all right. That's a good thing. But who they're paying for the board that and the board members to attend? Are the board members voluntary or paid?
They're paid, from what I've seen.
Okay, so that's a bit of an issue then. And the only question then is whether there's any actual physical evidence that's hit early on where there's a disagreement, and that could be staged. I'm going to have an argument with you just to prove that you're independent. Yeah, and now here's what I want you to do. Now we've proved it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, apparently a Harvard law professor came up with the idea. And Facebook, I think even 2 years ago, it took them 2 years to even set this up. So there's that. It's better than nothing, I want to say. I mean, it's better than the YouTube or the Google model where they just make a decision and, you can appeal, but usually nothing happens. There's no human being behind it.
Well, I've put my story in the chat room, and it kind of links in with this. And this is Eric Schmidt, the chief executive of Google, saying that that there is an excessive issue at the moment with social networks just being nothing more than an amplification tool for idiots.
Yeah, there's something to that.
And I think that is, that's the crux of social media right there, actually. I'm not even going to debate it. But there is a tie-in with this in the fact that good on Facebook, because they're actually being quite proactive to try and thwart this idea that if we're not careful with social media, you will get to a stage where there will be control and censorship over it. And I'm sitting here going, I don't know if I want censorship over my social media. And then I look at someone who's written a story about frigging flat Earth, and you're like, that shouldn't be allowed. That, you know, or they've written about the fact that dinosaurs were only 6,000 years ago. You're like, that should not be allowed. And someone go, well, that's freedom of speech. No, it's not. I think you've got to draw a line between what's just, you know, I have an opinion which I'm questioning, and questioning's really good, versus, no, mate, you're talking bollocks.
Yeah, but to be fair, this oversight board will not do that. They will, it's basically the content moderators will flag something and block something. So let's say the flat earther post, and the flat earther poster can then go to the oversight board and say, oh, this is under freedom of speech, I should be able to post this, and can basically appeal that.
And when that case comes, as long as they say, don't talk bollocks, I'm fine.
Yeah. But
I'm not going to suggest that things like religion and so on, I'm a devout atheist, I don't believe in God, and I never will. But, you know, I do understand that there are people that do, and they take a great deal of, you know, solace from that, and I don't deny them that. I deny them fighting a war in the name of God. That doesn't work for me. But religion's okay for people that want it, but prove or disprove is irrelevant. But when you've got carbon dating that goes, I know, right, because carbon grows at the same pace no matter what. I know that this bone is 275 million years old. And someone goes, no, it can't be because of the New Testament. Like, what the?
Or no. God yeah. said it no. that way as a test to test your
no.
faith.
I'm not even going to deny the creation story in the Bible. If people believe that, that's fine. But you can't use what a story that carbon dating says is palpably malformed. You know, the creation of man at the time when man was created, 15,000 years ago, etc., that can work out. I'm fine with that. But don't tell me nothing happened before that. You know, there's like, then there was light, full stop. And then actually there's like 275 million pages before and God created man. Then I'm fine with it. That's okay. And we don't know what happened in those 275 because there's no men there to record it. Good point.
So basically, we're missing the Bible's Silmarillion.
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe there is like another book that someone wrote and that we haven't seen yet.
Well, no, because they didn't come till after the creation of the of man, did they? The man, Adam and Eve. Mm. And that's fine. Mm. And I'm going to get blasphemy emails here now saying I'm being blasphemed.
For sure.
I'm not. I'm saying if you wish to believe that story, that is fine. But you've got to agree with the science that says that carbon dating is real. That's as long as you agree with that. And there's an awful lot. If you go to the Bishop of Bath and Wells, I think he is, he's very, very switched on to an integration of science and religion. He's a very good bloke to listen to. Absolutely excellent. Good friend of Brian Cox's as well. And there's a lot of synergy in the things that they're saying. But the thing is, I think Schmidt's right. There's got to be a thing where we say, right, sorry, mate, you're talking bollocks, and it's got to come down. And it can't be an opinion piece about something like religion. If people put up about religion, that's fine. That's their opinion. That's okay. But when you're talking about stuff that scientifically has been proven to be just utter shite, that has to come down. Because the problem is, no one questions it. There's too many people out there that just look at a meme online and go, that's what it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Coming back to the board, the story says the board members are actually part-time. Like they're paid, but they're part-time members. They serve a three-year term, so there's a term limit. And the board selects future members themselves. So I think the first round was selected by Facebook somehow. But they will basically select the future members themselves. So
pretty good. I like that.
Yeah,
and I like
it
that.
It will hear cases in panels of five, so it's not 20 people with 40 opinions at least. So yeah, I would say, I mean, Facebook is, I said, I'm not convinced it's not a PR thing. We'll have to see how effective it really is and whether Facebook actually is true to the word. But they're doing everything right. I mean, there's a charter that establishes the board and like details everything. It's a separate legal entity, so it's not a subsidiary of Facebook or owned by Facebook somehow.
But the sniff of censorship and government control is in the wind, so in that sense, it's perfect. Mm-hmm. It's a really good idea.
Yeah,
it's extremely
absolutely.
Yeah. And it's a really good idea for Facebook to comply with whatever rulings this board creates or comes up with, because otherwise, we're looking at a situation where governments can say, well, the board Facebook set up is in name only, so we still need to control.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know they're going to do that anyway, but...
Yeah, I think they've got...
That's a separate story.
They've got... at least they've bought some breathing space, because that'll elongate the argument from government. So the Senate will be saying, well, we need to control social media, and they go, well, they've done this initiative, we've got to leave that to see how it works. We can't do it straight away, because, you know, that would be wrong. They're clearly making an effort. So they've elongated the process, absolutely.
Yeah, that's definitely true. At the same time, I think today, or if the same day, I don't know, today or yesterday, the Senate, I think, or sent a subpoena to Facebook again for like a story that was posted. So we'll see.
I mean, Schmidt's quote in the story that I've picked, he said, it's an amplifier for idiots and crazy people, and it's not what we intended. Unless the industry gets its act together in a really clever way, then there's going to be regulation. And I think that's exactly what Facebook are doing here. to edit off at the pass move.
Oh yeah, this is definitely a preemptive strike.
Yeah,
yeah,
and it's bought in time.
Oh yeah. And they're including it. I mean, they're including Instagram, which I mean, kind of makes sense. Like, why not?
Yeah.
I honestly kind of want to see this grow to maybe more platforms, like maybe include Twitter, like include other platforms.
Yeah, so you're saying the Supreme Court for all social media?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, something like that.
And it's one Supreme Court. Then you'd have one entity,
like supported by everybody.
Yeah, and then you're talking about industry self-regulation. Yeah, I'm with that.
Yeah, you'd have more consistency between rulings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to see the fight that then breaks out, like, about the board members and who should be there and who shouldn't be there, but that's something that can be figured out.
Oh, I kind of do want to see that fight. It's going to be epic.
that's true. That's it. But I mean, that's something that can be figured out. Like, this is not the first, like, oversight system that we've ever established.
But I think, the situation is more complex. I get very frustrated by people that boil an issue down into a single statement you either cannot justify, you cannot prove, or is something that just, it's a figure that just doesn't lose in the telling. Mm. And it's like everyone goes, oh, this is why that happened, and someone got £200 million back in their pocket, and you're like, I'm pretty sure it never went down like that. I don't believe that for one second. I do believe the sum of money, but I don't believe it went in someone's pocket. It went in expenditure and justifications. It went in people's wages. Well, you know, if the government spends excess money on people's wages to give them a job to do something for verification, government exists to give people jobs to a certain degree. It's part of its remit. And but I think also then, the other thing that we don't do is we don't question. We just don't question as people. We sit and look at the memes and, you know, too many people will take the meme as being the truth and not go, well, I don't, I mean, me and Patrice have had a little spat this week over something. And that was all me going, I don't believe that. I just don't believe that. There's nothing that I know about that subject that tells me that that's real. And that's not we got into a discussion. It ended up as like as a right or wrong thing. It wasn't. It was about me just going, that cannot be right. And nobody does that anymore. People don't question the shit that's fed to them. They are mushrooms. You can't blame yourself for what you get.
Yeah, I mean, in a sense that has always been that way, but as you said, it has, like, even as that article says, it's being amplified.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is that we are allowing the amplification by the fact of I've got to say, journalism is particularly shit at the moment. The one thing that has stood out in all of this COVID crisis is that the British journalistic system is utterly repugnant. It does not work. It peddles shite. All it wants to do is make people angry. And we ain't going to get better as a species if that's what we're going to pursue. And social media is the same. You go on Twitter now, it is bilious, man. It is just utter shite. And I've said this week in the Slack room, keep your religion and your politics to yourself, mate, because I'm not having it. Anything that goes in here, it's going to be fun and it's going to be enjoyable. And I'm not making it family-friendly fun. It's not like I'm being censorship that way. It's just like we're not going to talk about contentious subjects because no one is falling out. Not at me.
I'm glad that you have that very strict rule.
Yeah. But
it's actually nice knowing that there's a place that I can go and just look through comments and not have to worry about seeing something that's just going to make my blood boil.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's even a term for it. It's called doom scrolling.
Yes, doom scrolling.
It's what you do on Twitter.
Yep. I find Twitter really tough now. I barely go on it. I'll go on and I'll promote the shows. Hey, we're doing this. And I'll go and, you know, retweet the people that have bothered to say thanks to TSO hosts and I'm N Max, which is really important that you do. And all of that stuff. But actually, when I start to read through comments, there's a few things that are really nice. I have got better at curating the feed, though. So I mute the word Trump and stuff like that and mute certain hashtags.
Yep.
And that has got an awful lot better. I've had to put a bit of work in to make that happen. But I do lament the fact, you know, I was 17 million, I think. So I'm one of the first couple of weeks. Not as good as Betsy Weber at 6,000. But I'm in the first. Yeah. I'm in the first ever. And nearly always as well, actually, if you look at someone that's a real arsehole on Twitter, their number always starts above a billion. All the people that have got below a billion are fairly normal and just kind of, just have a chat. Well, what do you think?
So
is it time to fork Twitter, the pre-billion and post-billion?
Yeah, it is actually. We should just cull. That's exactly it. So if you're listening now, right, and you go to Tweetbot and you look at your profile, it should tell you the number that you were when you registered for Twitter. If it's over a billion, then leave Twitter, go into the drawing room, take the pearl handle revolver and a glass of whiskey. I'm joking. Don't actually do that, please.
Don't do that.
I'm hoping you're not going to do that.
Yeah, please don't do that.
But what I'm saying, if you look at all the arseholes that are on Twitter, guarantee then their registration number is above a billion. If you're above a billion, you're dead to me. There you go.
I'm so glad I made the cut.
Are you in?
I don't even know.
I'm in.
Oh, Patrice, we've got to find out your number because actually, mate, you and me could proper fallout tonight. I don't want to start Tweetbot in case it causes the siling in the audio. Someone find Patrice's number. The lowest person I know, I think Tom Merritt was about 6,000 and Ayaz and the girl that used to do the show with them that no one hears from anymore. And but the lowest ever that I've met is Betsy Weber at 600,000.
Yeah, I'm just over a million. I don't remember exactly what my number is.
That's impressive. You are much kudos from me here, mate. Get yourself out. There you go. So when you go out and you support IMN Max and TSO host this week, put on your Twitter number, okay? And then I'll go through all the answers, and I won't unfollow you because you're over a billion if you've clearly supported TSO host and IMN Max, because that means you're a normal person. But the ones that go, you're an arsehole, then you're gone. Ben Gillam, 17,705,617. You must have been like about a minute or something before me or after me. I don't know what I've got. I'm going to start tweet, but if it goes silent, then tough. I just want to know. Just talk amongst yourselves while we're doing this, eh?
Where do you see your user number?
If you go to Tweetbot, and then you click on your name, so find a post that someone's made about you, and then right at the bottom it says Twitter user. I've done you, Ben. 17 million.
I'm 234 million, according to this.
Okay, that's okay. You're still in the cool kids, but you're not 17 million 347.
There's a website where you can just enter your handle and your
book. I'm obviously just looking in the wrong place because I can see my followers and my number of tweets, but not my
think as well. British Tech is lower than that. Yeah, so I registered British Tech first. I registered you and Rankin first as it happened, and then I swapped the profiles over. British Tech had more followers, and my ego was suffering. So British Tech is actually 14,566,516.
Yeah. Jeff, it says here 9,828,500.
Oh, 9 million. 9 million is impressive.
Oh, I joined a lot later than I thought. Okay.
No, but 9 million, anything under a billion, then you're welcome. If you're over a billion, you're dead to me.
Well, at least
I'm your foodie flashback is over a billion.
Unless you're a business, so like IMN Max has got to be over like 3 billion because they've only just started up sort of a year ago. So that's different, entirely different. But if you're an individual on Twitter and you only signed up at like 3 billion, unless you're sort of 20, I suppose 16. Because then you wouldn't have been born when I signed up Twitter.
But it hasn't been around that long.
I've got too many caveats now to sit and work it out. I'm okay if your Twitter number's over a billion. I do apologize. I won't.
I think we need to create an oversight board to determine who on Twitter can and cannot be your friend.
Who BTN lives and dies on the network, yeah.
Yes.
That is a pretty big number I just posted.
Oh, freaking hell. You need to put some commas in this, dude. What?
Yeah.
So you registered Foodie Flashback on Twitter.
Yeah. I mean, this year, so.
Wow.
That's the ID of that account.
That can't be right.
It should be in scientific notation.
No, that can't be right because there's not that many stars in the universe.
Yeah, that's I'm guessing that Twitter changed their algorithm at some point. Like just generating random numbers.
That's 12 to the power of, that's 10 to the power of 17.
Yeah.
So that's like more sand than there is on a beach.
Yeah, I mean, do you know, with all the bots and all the stuff being registered, I mean, it's possible, but I'm just guessing. I mean, either this website is wrong, which is possible, or Twitter just changed how they generate the user IDs.
Right, there we go. I'm going to check it out because I can't even... I'm looking going, I don't know. I can't work out what that is. I can't work out the numbers.
It has like...
No, because you're well out of the trillions.
Yeah.
I thought there was only about 3 billion users.
Well, that's active users. I mean, you have to take into account like all the accounts ever registered. Even abandoned, bots registered, accounts blocked, all of that.
So that's 1.2 quintillion.
Wow. Yeah, I hope. I hope that's just...
That's 1.2 quintillion. No wonder Twitter's struggling.
Is that more cells than are in the human body?
Like I said, there's not that many stars in the universe. I bet you.
Yeah, I think so.
That's.
Yeah, would be interesting if someone from Twitter is listening, whether that's actually they actually have that many accounts or had that many accounts or it's just a random number now.
I listened to a podcast on Pi a few months back, and everyone's going about the kind of. And it's the measurement of pi, the calculation of pi to x digits is just a dick measuring competition between mathematicians. So it's like, I'm going to pull out my pi number, you pull out your pi number, and I bet my pi number's longer. And it started off as just that, and it was like 10, that's enough. 12, that's it.
Well, 20, what if you're comparing enough. Your pi numbers in a cold room?
Good point, so you can have an extra one, maybe. But they've done pi to about 200 now. And the guy said, so... What is the benefit of pi to 200 decimal places? And he went, well, it's more accurate. And he said, but okay, so...
For what?
Could you explain to us, please, what it's more accurate for? And he's like, okay, so if you have pi to 22 digits, you can accurately predict the circumference of the Milky Way to 1 meter. And we've done it to 200. He said... That means you could calculate the circumference of the visible universe from Hubble to within 30 or 40 centimeters.
Okay. And that's pretty impressive.
Oh, now I know there's a practical purpose. But it is. That pi decimal places is just a dick measuring competition for mathematicians.
Yeah.
And they've worked out it's not going to get them laid. It really isn't going to get them laid.
Yeah.
And I like that they're taking that number to the wrong conventions.
Oh, do you think there's people there that 3.141594?
There's a fetish for everything.
True. Yeah, that's true. That is true. Listen, yeah.
I like my pie apple with like whipped cream on top.
Pie desophilia. There we go. We got a show title. Pie desophilia. Do you have another story, Jeff?
Sure.
We've done 50 minutes.
Yeah. About two
50 minutes of talking utter bollocks. I told you this is how it happens. I'm doing three people on the show from now on. Atlee, don't ever come back.
Here's another story if you want it.
Go on then. Shove it in. Yeah. And we'll do a quickie.
Okay. Here's your quickie. Microsoft is has created this new platform called Azure Orbital Emulator so that they can work with companies, and they've partnered with SpaceX so they can accurately model the orbits of satellite clouds. So now you can take that massive bag of satellites you're going to throw on the top of a rocket and accurately place each one of those so you can model and see what they're going to run into later, I suppose. So I look at this and I think, okay, this is actually really useful, and I'm glad that someone has come up with a system powerful enough to be able to accurately model these satellite clouds. But on the other hand, it actually kind of sucks that we need to do this, and I feel like we are just going to lose our ability to view the night sky because there'll be so many of these little satellites up there that it will look like we have extra stars.
I'm going to go with Neil deGrasse Tyson on that one. He said the sky is so big that the satellites are not going to matter.
Well, no, if you're an astrophotographer, I'm taking issue with that because there is. Because the point is, if you want to take a nice picture of Andromeda, there's the amount of light. I mean, you're talking about Andromeda is massive in the sky. It covers a bigger area than our sun does when the sun's out. But the problem is there's so little light coming from it that it gets to us that you've got to set a camera up and you've got to leave the camera running overnight. So if you're leaving it running overnight and you've got Starlink flying over the top of it 8 times, what's the point? There is no astrophotography anymore. Elon got into trouble a long time ago where he was like, bloody photographers don't give a shit about them. And then there was such a backlash on that. He was like, okay, we'll rotate them slightly so that they don't glint back to Earth in the same way. But Starlink is becoming a visible problem, an absolute visible problem.
That's true.
I like the idea of Starlink, and if you give internet away for free, etc., to the masses in remote areas, I'm totally with that. But 42,000 circling pieces of junk. I watched a video.
I was watching more than that.
Well, I know there is, but these are 42,000 just for one satellite system.
Yeah.
I was watching. It was either Discovery or National Geographic. And they got an interview on, which was like NASA's near misses. And Scott Kelly was on there, the guy that spent the whole year in space on the space station. And he said, yeah, we were sitting doing a little broadcast back. And then we got a message through saying that they were switching us to a private channel. And you know when they say it's on a private channel because they're stopping all of the feeds that you watch on the NASA website, you know something serious has happened. And you saw him just switch this thing. And he was floating around with a microphone doing this thing to a school or something like that. And then it said, okay, so we cut into a private channel. Yeah, Scott, so we got a satellite that's coming to there's a remote chance that okay. And he was just like, okay. Like, Jesus, you're calm. But it's like the instant realization of the fact that, well, if it hits, I'll be vaporized. I won't know anything about it. It'll be done. It's not that bad. Okay. Anyway, how fast is it going? They went, about 14 kilometers per second.
Yep.
Like, okay, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, how long does the space station take to go one rotation? It's like 90 minutes?
90 minutes, 17,500 miles an hour.
Yeah. It's crazy.
25,000 kilometers.
Yeah.
It's massively fast. But it's whether the trajectory of that is on the same pathway as you or not, at the same altitude as you. And deGrasse Tyson's right, it's like, you know, well, actually, if you've got 10 foot of elevation change, it misses you entirely. It's that simple. But but you know, just that and just this is the way you just okay.
Okay.
And you like the Apollo 13 guys? How cool they were! You know, we've got a problem. Mm-hmm. What's going out? We're venting oxygen. Like, that's all. Doesn't matter. Yeah. Carry on. Stick a plug in.
Yeah. We're kind of out of control. Losing all our air.
They are a different breed. Just a different.
What's up with you guys?
I mean, they've also done years worth of training for everything that could go wrong, or everything that they could imagine at least that could go wrong. So you have to take that into account. Like they've thought about everything that could really happen.
Yeah, there was an interest. Have you watched the Challenger program on Netflix?
Not yet.
Yeah, get that watch because that's really, really good because it talks about Krista McAuliffe and why she selected and America's teacher, and they selected another teacher to back her up. And they were best mates. They had a, you know, across from each other in the apartments. And there's a bit where they talk about the guy that's the commander, and he says to his wife, I don't know whether to tell them about the risk because NASA, they've had 2 weeks, NASA aren't preparing them. And she's like, yeah, you've got to tell them. Absolutely have to tell them the brutal facts of the risks that they're exposed to.
Yeah.
And he sat McAuliffe down and this other woman down. And he explained to them, this is a test vehicle. And that he's kind of like, you know, you can have hundreds of flights in vehicles. They're still test vehicles. It's not a working model. This is not a working model. It will never be a working model. It's always going to be a test. Mm-hmm. And in any test vehicle, you realize there may be no coming back. So I kind of felt nice about that. In the, you know, excuse the word nice, but it was satisfying to think that she, although, you know, that crew died, they all had the expectation that they knew what they were doing. They knew the risks they were taking. Rather than going into it blindly and thinking it was a commercial space flight, which it really, really wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And it never was, and it never will be.
Yeah, there's a story. NASA has never confirmed, or anybody has ever confirmed it, but at least people like in the background are saying every flight, the crew writes like their like goodbye letters, basically.
Yeah, no, it's the same with servicemen. All servicemen are required to leave a will and a goodbye letter before they go into active tours.
Yeah. Except NASA has never confirmed it. They don't want to talk about it at all.
I wouldn't even dream of suggesting that that's false.
Yeah,
that just
I guess I've
been around the British Army enough, and I know that that goes on. So I don't doubt that for a second, being an aerospace agency.
Yeah, but related to the story, we had like on Tuesday, I was in like our office location. We came up with a really cool idea, the most secure backup solution ever. Send it to Mars. Nobody can access it. I mean, you might have an issue retrieving
it's not
your
a backup. I'm going to say it's not a backup then, really, is it? It's a send-off.
Well, yeah, you can retrieve it.
Archive, not a backup.
Well, now, actually, you say that, but there was a story this week that Nokia and NASA, and I think the alliteration was the only thing in this, but Nokia and NASA are putting up a 3G network on the moon.
Mm-hmm.
For when we go there. Yeah. And there's a big announcement. Lynn's in the chat room. But in the Slack room, put in a thing about there's NASA have discovered a phenomenon around the new moon which they cannot see with the naked eye, and there is no other information about that. They're going to have a press conference, so we've got to wait with bated breath for it, and that'll be next week's full story.
Yeah,
it's like a black monolith.
The announcement.
It was clearly chiselled by aliens.
Yeah.
And it's got a USB port at the bottom.
Hmm.
Although NASA were confounded because it's clearly 1,000 years old, but it's USB-C. So. Oh, God.
What's that man in black when they said like aliens brought all technology?
A USB plug over and over to get it to work was stupid.
Well, that's why they gave up on it, you see. That was exactly it. It was just like they could never get the USB plug in the right way up. So they just abandoned the moon. It was a fertile nirvana up until that point. It was just like...
And totally ruined, thanks to USB.
No, there was this guy, right? So there's like this alien despot, and he's so pissed off that he just has a scorched earth policy on the moon. And the only thing that's left is the black monolith that you can only see with non-visible light, ultraviolet spectrum or something, I'm totally. I'm going to put that on social media. If I put that on social media, it's true. There you go.
Yep. Totally true. Yep.
Totally.
This podcast and all the others is supported. The network is entirely supported by TSO Host. You got to get yourself out on the socials. Quite a few people have done this week. Thank you so much to those people who bother their asses to think about the people that look after us, because without them, we have nothing. We are not publishing podcasts. We are not having the bandwidth that we've got supported. And we fold. Simple as that. So they're not asking you to spend money with them, although you can. BTN20 gets you 20% off your basket for hosting services. But they are asking if we could get people to give them brand recognition on social media. So get yourself out on the socials, include British Tech, and include TSO Hosts, and say thanks to them for supporting at British Tech. And likewise, if you can, including that tweet, the nice people at iMinMax, say thanks to them, because they've got some great services going on. Anything with an Apple logo on, they'll fix it. Simple as that. Crack screen, crack watch screen, anything at all, they will manage to fix the thing. They'll also get your data back. They have got DocsMate data. The Hawaii phone, I can give you an update today. The Hawaii phone was, it took a week, but they recovered 100% of the data, and that has now been transferred back to the guy, and he is psyched and over the moon. So they are an international repair business.
Oh, yes, they are.
Yeah, absolutely.
And really actually, good. I booked a repair for the Mac. I have to figure out shipping still, so it might still take a couple of days, but the Mac is coming Callum's way.
Right, so there you go. The Mac is going to be fixed, and it will be returned to Patrice. And well, actually, we'll get the guys to take some pictures of that, because that'll be kind of...
Oh, absolutely.
So, yeah, excellent. So please, make sure you support iMinMax and on the socials and TSO Host. Right. Time for a cool thing. What have we got for us? Who's ready? Oh, Patrice is ready. So, right, there you go. We can do ladies first, finally.
I forgot to update my list. I have like a big note where I just put everything in. But my cool thing today is a podcast. It's called The Electorate. It is definitely a political podcast. I want to say mostly US-centric, but it's really, really interesting podcast. It's done one by mostly black women or women of color. So, like, it's voices you rarely ever hear, and you especially don't hear in, like, the political spectrum, very rarely. And I signed up during the Black Lives Matter, like, protests because, like, I was looking for, like, different voices and mm-hmm. I wanted to learn more. And so far, the episodes have been really, really good and really interesting, and they dive into really difficult topics and... as I said, it is political, but it's not like political in a, Democrats versus Republican, mostly, at least not in that sense. It's more, politics is screwed up. How can we fix it? What are we doing? Stuff like that. So it's a really, really good podcast. The Electorate, electorate.com. It's a really good podcast.
Excellent, mate. Like that. I shall have a watch.
That's really cool.
Or listen. What have you got for us, Jeffrey?
Just dropped you the link. And my cool thing, if you notice, my lighting looks a lot better today. I don't have a blue cast to my skin. And that's because I bought the Dazzny Desk Mount video light kit. So it's two LED panels. And you can adjust the temperature and the brightness, and it comes with a remote control so that you don't have to get up and get behind the panels and do the adjustment. And the panels link together wirelessly, so if you adjust one, it adjusts both, which is nice. And it comes with desk mounts, so I'm not taking up any floor space. And each one has its own power supply, so I don't have to worry about having them close enough where I can drape a wire between them. And it was an easy setup, and it wasn't that expensive. So the price on Amazon is like just under $200, and it's working well, and it's a lot cheaper than a lot of the other. Lighting systems that I was looking at, and I'm really liking it. It's working out well.
Cool. I like that. I can't remember what I did as a pick last week. So it's highly likely that I did this last week. And if I did, then I apologize. But I haven't got anything else to, put up. So I had the same problem as Jeff. It was just like I was doing stuff in the morning and Thursday mornings I do a networking group. And like usually I'll come down here, but some mornings it's like, okay, I had a couple of whiskeys last night. I shouldn't really drive a car. And then other mornings it's just like I want a line in the morning. So I set my alarm for 10 minutes before I need to do it and I keep my pajama bottoms on. It's that bad. So what I did was I had the same problem. It was like I do really need to have a lighting improvement on what I've currently got. So I bought these things, desk lamp clip light, three modes. They can change the colours slightly as well. It's three power settings. They're on a flexible gooseneck, and they're not too heavy for the gooseneck, so you can position them wherever you like. And they come with a bulldog clamp on them. And the thing that's nice is the bulldog clamp is padded, so you can actually clip it. So my Thunderbolt monitor at home where I clip in, and actually nice. I'm clipped on the glass, and it doesn't damage the glass, and it doesn't pop off the glass because they're slightly rubberized as well, so it grips. And then you just gooseneck these things up and point them down onto you, and they're brilliant. You get two in a pack, and they're $10.99. No, you don't get two in a pack. There's one in a pack.
Yeah.
I did do this last week.
You did do it last week, yeah.
Oh, there's a surprise. I probably did it on the Mac.
It's still good.
Well, I did it on the Mac show.
Still good.
Did I do it on the Mac show?
And it's a lot cheaper than my new lighting system.
I can totally get away with it. I can edit. I can totally get
away with it. Yeah, it might have been the Mac show, actually.
Okay. Well, it's worth buying either way.
Yeah, either way, it's good.
Right. Yeah, bollocks. At least she's right.
Yeah.
Stuff you all.
Yeah.
I'm an old man. I've got a failing brain, and I haven't bought anything. The only thing I bought off, I bought some protein drinks for my dad off Amazon this week. I bought a game capture card for Alyssa, which didn't work with the old MacBook. And I bought some short USB-C to USB-A cables, which I just figured really weren't exciting enough. And I've given you loads of tips about things to watch on Netflix today. So if you're not happy, write to your MP and I'll go, bollocks, I don't care. Where can we get a hold of you, Patrice?
Well, as every week, you're on the big show, and tomorrow, for example, on the Mac show, all the social media links and everything I do on thepatrice.com. And my podcast, Foodie Flashback, I posted this week, the episode with Big Chris Ashley, which is really interesting, and I'm guessing you still have to listen to.
Yeah, no, I'm going
to. If you want the recipe for it.
I do. I want to
run. And the next one is coming up with Brett Terpstra.
Excellent, mate. Good. Brett, I might pass on. Because he's vegan, isn't he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but he wasn't always. He has done some stuff.
Okay. No, don't try and upsell it to me. I'm not going for a nut cutlet dish. Does he talk about steaks and bacon and? His old love of them.
A little bit. We mentioned it. He said bacon is the reason why he went off vegetarianism.
Really?
So, that makes sense.
Yeah, but he's back, though.
He went off vegetarianism because of bacon.
Mm-hmm.
As in, he needed it in his life.
Yeah, he needed bacon in his life.
So has he still got bacon in his life?
No, he stopped.
Okay.
But you never know. Like,
well, he's on the show tomorrow, so I'll ask him how it was. Jeffrey, where will you be?
Twitter and Instagram. I'm jgamut both places. Here on the big show, tomorrow on the Mac show. And coming up on October 28th, I am moderating a meetup panel on using Zapier for automation. And the people that are on the panel, Maddie Osman, Joe Casabona, and Jimmy Rose, are all really cool people, and are really into automation and Zapier. So October 28th, I should put a link in the meetup, or excuse me, in the chat. So I'll do that. There.
Brilliant. That'll be good.
Nice.
My name's Ewan Rankin. Get me at Ewan Rankin. Twitter, you can follow the network at British Tech. Now, we will be back next week if Jeff can do the shows or if Patrice has got his laptop fixed and he can do it. So, Jeff, can you do the shows next week if Patrice can't?
Hold on. I was just double-checking and making sure there aren't any surprises.
You don't need to do that live on the show. You don't need to do that.
Yes.
We'll probably be back next week. Okay.
So we'll be back.
We're definitely back next week with Jeff and the team on Thursday night at 7 and Friday at 4. But I'm stuffed both days. I've got work to do. Right? But it's good work. It's important work, and I can't get out. I don't want to get out of it, absolutely. So we'll have a great weekend and enjoy the weather because it's going to be crap. And we'll see you next weekend. Thanks for listening.
Okay. Enjoy the weather. It's got to be crap.
It's got to be crap. You can get pissed on from a great height.
Okay.
Snuggle up, put the fire, the log burner on, and open, and crack open a nice whiskey.
I think this sounds like a wonderful plan.
Yeah, but your whiskey and my whiskey, mate.
You drink
that American look.
I have a very wide palate for whiskeys.
You got to try Powers. Actually, I should have done that. It's not really a very good tech pick, but Powers Gold, mate. Powers Gold is absolutely lovely. There you go. I'll post it in the chat room. There you go. 30 quid a bottle, but it's absolutely stunning. It's like, it's really heavy. Like, you know, when you get a red wine that's like about 14, 15%, and it's like chewing the grape. It's that, mm-hmm. that full-bodied. This is that full-bodied. It's lovely.
All right. I will look and see if it's available at either of the big liquor stores that are still left in town.
Yeah, and at a reasonable price as well, because it's going to be an import, so... I don't want you spending
definitely not available on Amazon.
$60 or $90. Well, I got it off Amazon, so.
Yeah, no, but it's like I just checked the other countries; and it's not available, or at least you can't find it. Right? You never know.
I need to bring it over as a care package. I'm going to come over skiing. Stay with Jeff.
Awesome.
We'll go drinking every day.
Good plan.
Awesome.
And hopefully you've got a shop there. I can buy a new liver.
Yes, sure. Yes, yeah. We have that.
The liver show.
Yeah, I mean, it's the US. Everything can be bought. So.
True.
That's like one of those, you know, sell your kidneys kind of stories. That's not fair.